Come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of the Cape Elizabeth Church of the Nazarene in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. Download more sermons or learn about the Cape Elizabeth Church of the Nazarene at our website, capenazarene.org. Here's this week's message.
Good morning. As they told you, my name is Amanda. I am the youth pastor at South Portland Church of the Nazarene, so I am accustomed to speaking to teenagers. So bear with me this morning. I wanted to share my testimony with you. I don't know if any of you heard over this past winter some of the medical things that were going on in my life and may have been praying for me, but I wanted to share with you the work that God has done in my life and reflecting back on the lessons that we read about this morning. So to start out with my story, it began 7 years ago, right after I gave birth to my beautiful daughter, Alethea. I woke up 6 days after she was born to feed her, and I was very happy, and she was happy, and she ate, and she fell asleep, and I went to put her back in her crib, and I suddenly had this crushing feeling in my chest, and I ended up going into the emergency room, and the doctors discovered I was having a heart attack, that my left coronary artery was unraveling. And so they attempted to do a bypass to fix my heart. When they sewed the new vein in, the artery just kept unraveling, and so they were not able to fix the artery the way that they typically would have. So at that point, the doctors came out, and to my husband, who was having a nervous breakdown because of this sudden emergency, they said to him, if we don't take drastic measures right now, then your wife is not going to survive. And so they told him about this heart pump that they could put in that would beat for my heart to help me to make it from that point toward transplant eventually. They told him, though, even if we put this heart pump in, there's only a 20% chance she'll make it through the surgery if she makes it through the night. And so he said, well, do whatever you need to do because I want my wife to survive. So the doctors at Maine Med, they put the heart pump in, and then everybody waited. And I laid there in the CTICU at Maine Med trying to lay still and heal after that surgery. Well, that evening, something amazing happened. Something that reminded me that God always knows where we are. I wasn't even aware that this had happened. I was sedated and not aware, but this showed my family that God had us right in the palm of his hand in this moment. There was a nurse who came in who, she was my nurse, and in the CTICU, there's only one nurse to one patient. So you're assigned, they're assigned, they don't get to choose. So she showed up to work that night, and when she walked in, they said, this is your patient, this is Amanda Lawton, and this is what's happened to her. She has this small baby, and she had this heart attack, and now she's fighting for her life in this room. And my nurse almost fell over, because she had been at a prayer meeting at her church Sunday evening. And all of this happened early Monday morning. So at the prayer service on Sunday evening, as they were praying, one of the people in the group said, I really feel like we need to pray for a woman named Amanda. And people looked a little bit confused, and they said, well, what's going on with Amanda? And the person said, I don't know. I don't know an Amanda. She said, who knows someone named Amanda? And no one in that room knew anyone named Amanda. So they said, well, let's pray for her anyway and see what happens. And so they prayed. And when my nurse walked in to the unit that night and she saw me, she just couldn't even contain couldn't even contain and keep her composure as a nurse to, you know, not talk about God to her patient's family and to her patients, that she just was bubbling, literally bubbling over with just the amazingness of God knowing where we are at that time, and shared that with my family, and that was a huge encouragement. And what was amazing was that was just the beginning of the miracles that God began doing in my life, in my health journey. So over the next several weeks, my family had begun a blog online called Care Pages on that website. And it's a place where people who their family members are having medical issues can keep others updated on their progress and their condition. As you write the blog entries, it will send out an email to everyone who is subscribed to the blog, and so it'll alert them, oh, there's a new message happening. So my mom really liked to write blog posts on this, and so she would update everybody as to each day what was happening in my health. Well, because of Facebook, which is awesome in some ways and not awesome in other ways, a lot of people who I had gone to college with in Missouri, who are now missionaries and pastors all throughout the world, they knew something was going on and had connected with Care Pages. And so as my family was updating this blog about how I was doing, people can respond to the post and say, oh, we're praying for you from this place. And so over the next few weeks, we started seeing God moving all throughout the world in different groups. There was a youth group in Africa who was praying for me. And so as I kind of woke up and was becoming more aware of what was going on, my family would come in and they would be like, Amanda, there's a youth group in Africa praying for you. And I was like, why is there a youth group in Africa praying? How do they even know? And we were just discovering all of these connections that we had all over the country, all over the world, of different people who don't even speak English, who probably have they may have never seen a picture of me. I certainly don't know them. Praying on my behalf and going toward God in prayer because of the situation I was going through. That was just amazing to us, that they could continue to be updated and continue to be encouraged by the work that God was doing in my life and in my body. So I spent several weeks at the hospital getting used to this pump that I had, which was inside my body, but it was a tube that came out of my body, and it was attached to a box about the size of a computer tower, you know, like your old computers that had the giant towers, and those are kind of heavy, that it was on a cart that looked like a rolling suitcase. So everywhere I went, I had to pull this cart with me. And it was too heavy for me to lift, so I needed assistance from my husband and from my family to get up and down stairs, to get in and out of the car. They all had to be trained on how to take care of me at home with this pump, because it was very serious medical procedures going on with the pump. And so over the next several weeks, my family learned how to do that, did extensive training, and I was able to go home after 6 weeks of being in the hospital when the doctor said, we don't even think she's going to make it through the night. And I was able to go back home with my family to be able to hold my sweet little girl as just an infant. And we continued to see God just working and making me stronger and stronger. Well, I was really nervous that I wouldn't qualify for a heart transplant. I'm not quite sure why I was so nervous, but the doctors from Boston, from the transplant center, came up to interview me to see if I was a candidate for a transplant. And so when they came in, the doctor who was interviewing me had this wild hair that was like Albert Einstein kind of hair, and he had on this tweed jacket and a polka dot bow tie. And he came in and I was like, are you really a doctor? Like, I don't know And he sat down and he looked at my chart, and my husband and I were sitting, you know, I'm in the hospital bed, and my husband's sitting next to me, and we're so nervous, like it's a job interview or something. And as he's looking through my chart, he's just, oh, and was not really saying anything that was like definitive. And finally, he was like, yes, I do. I do think that you would qualify for a heart transplant. And so at that time, they listed me for the heart transplant, and that was in the beginning of the summer. And he said, though, this could take a long time, so just prepare yourself. This could take a while. So I was on the list, and I was at home, and I was taking care of my daughter. And throughout the summer, there were several issues I was having with the mechanical part of the device that I was hooked up to. It kept losing its connections. And so I ended up being bumped up on the transplant list. And in August of 2009, only 4 months after I had the initial heart attack, I got the call from the Brigham in Boston that they had found the perfect match. They had found the perfect donor heart. And they told me, you know, come down as quickly as you can get here. And they had initially told me I might be able to take the helicopter down, which that's exciting. And so I said, it was this doctor, Dr. Mudge, who had interviewed us, who called. And I was like, Dr. Mudge, do you want me to go to the hospital so I can take the air flight down to the Brigham? And he's like, we don't have time for that. Just get on the highway. He's like, don't eat anything. Just go. And I'm like, are you sure? Because I really don't mind taking the helicopter. And he's like, get down here. So we went down. The transplant surgery itself had some complications. I had some complications following the surgery with my kidneys. But all in all, after about 6 weeks in the hospital after the transplant, I was able to come back home to be with my daughter, who during that time was being taken care of by my grandparents, who are amazing. They had been in ministry for their entire lives. My grandfather graduated high school and became a pastor. So for over 50 years, they had been doing ministry. And they took my daughter in, and they were taking really good care of her. And we had begun to give her a little bit of cereal right before I had the transplant, just to get her used to eating, like a tablespoon a day of cereal. And my Nana was really, really concerned that Alethea was healthy and that they were doing what I wanted. And so they misunderstood, and they started giving her 3 bowls of rice cereal every day. And my little tiny baby that I kissed goodbye when I went down for my transplant, several weeks later, when I was well enough for her to come and visit and to see her, was a very large, plump little baby who she could hardly sit up on her own. She was so round. But she was healthy and she was happy. And I got to go home and be with her and be with my husband. And over the next several years, I had minimal issues with my heart. God really was working in that situation and providing an awesome donor heart, an awesome match for me. Over the past year and a half, I've been dealing with some kidney issues. My kidney function has been declining over since my heart transplant. But the last year and a half, it really took a big loss in kidney function. And so my doctors have been preparing me to go on to dialysis. And it wasn't urgent this winter, but they had put in a fistula, and we were getting ready for dialysis. And one day, I brought my daughter to school. I dropped her off at school, and I was driving to the store. And as I was driving, I was just thinking about my daughter, because I love her. And I was thinking about how awesome God is, and that often I'll think about this back to when all of my health issues started. And people have asked me, you know, is it because of the pregnancy? And they don't really know. It's possible. But my response is always, if I hadn't gone through the pregnancy and had my daughter, then and I wouldn't have her here, possibly I wouldn't have gone through the medical things, but I want my daughter here, so I would go through the medical things again if that meant having her here with us. And so I was thinking about that as I was driving, and often family members and friends will say, when are you going to write your book, your story about this? And I'm like, I have a child. I work full time. I don't have time to write a book right now. So eventually someday I'll write a book. And as I was driving that morning, I thought of the title for my book. And I felt so proud of myself that, like, finally I have the beginning of the book. And as I was driving, it hit me that the title of my book will be I'll Do It All Over Again. And at that moment, I was like, would I really do it all? And I was like, I would do it all over again. I love my family. I love my daughter. I love God. I love how God's word has been spread because of the testimony of my life and the healings that I've gone through, and that God has forgiven me of my sins, and that he has called me to live for him every day. So, yes, I would definitely do it all over again. I didn't understand at that moment that God was speaking to me and that quite literally was preparing me to do it all over again. Just a few days later, on February 2nd, I had been really sick the week previous to that. My doctors thought I had pneumonia. I'd been in bed, and that weekend, I began to feel better. I went to church on Sunday. I told the youth, I was like, my students at South Portland, they sit behind me during service. And so when I went in, I sat right down and I was like, nobody hug me. I have pneumonia. This is a big deal. So I was like trying to keep them healthy. And so during our greeting time, I turned around and I was like, you guys are not allowed to hug me. I have pneumonia. And I had been out of church for several weeks because of the fistula surgery that I had. And so they hadn't seen me, and they had been on a retreat. And they were like, we don't care. We want to be able to get out of school, so we're going to hug you. And we miss you. And so they came up and hugged me. And I was like, no, guys, stop hugging me. And they were just funny. And they just grabbed me and hugged me, and I was like, you guys love me so much, you're going to get pneumonia. This is terrible. But anyway, that day I was starting to feel better. So I was like, this is really awesome that I'm going to be okay from this pneumonia. Well, Tuesday morning I woke up, and my duties with my daughter are that in the morning we wake up. My husband goes to work early, and so we wake up and have breakfast and get dressed, and I drive her to school. And so that morning I woke up and I was coughing a lot. And I was like, this is strange. I haven't coughed this much the past few days. And I started to help her get ready, and I had no energy. And so I sat on the couch and I'm coughing. And between coughing, I'm like, go get your boots and go get your snow pants, all the stuff. And so she was being really good. She got all of her gear. She got ready. She did everything she was supposed to do. And I was like, all right, let's go to school. So we hopped in the car, and I drove her half a mile to school, came back home. And when I got back home, I just kept coughing. I couldn't stop coughing. And so I called my doctor's office, and I was like, I don't think that I'm getting better. This is really bad. And while I was on the phone with them, my grandparents, they are so sweet. They come to my home once a week for the past year, and they've helped with laundry and cleaning and different things that I've been having difficulty doing on my own with stairs and different things. And so they arrived, and they're busy and they start cleaning, and I'm still coughing, and they're like, Amanda, this is not good, you're coughing a lot. And I said, I know. I called the doctor's office, and they're supposed to call me back, like the nurse is supposed to call, and it was like 45 minutes, and I hadn't heard back from them, so my Nana said, you need to call them back. So I called them back, and the triage, or the woman who answered, as I'm trying to talk to her, like I can't catch my breath. I was just coughing and having a hard time breathing, and she was like, you're not coming in here. You need to go to the emergency room, like, right now. So my grandfather drove me to the emergency room, and we got there, and throughout that day, they were trying to figure out if it was the pneumonia. They did a chest x-ray. It looked like I had really bad pneumonia. So they were doing a bunch of tests, and my mom showed up, and she's a nurse, and she was like, I don't think this is pneumonia, I think it's her heart. And she's like, you know, we need to do something else. And so the doctors called the transplant center in Boston, and they were like, this is, you know, that sounds really weird. Why don't you life flight her down? Have her come down here to Boston. And so they eventually got everything organized for me to be taken down. And in the process of all of that, they intubated me, and I actually asked them to intubate me because I was having such difficulty breathing. So they intubated me, and come to find out, I had 3 blockages in my heart that I needed stents put in, and I still had a blood clot in my heart after they did that surgery. And so the time during that day, because it took so long to get everything together and to get me down to the hospital in Boston to have the surgery, my body had been going on such low oxygen levels that the doctors came to my husband, and they were like, even though we were able to put the stents in her heart and she's alive right now, they said, we don't know what kind of damage could be done to her brain because her oxygen level was so low. And so for the next few days, they had me paralyzed so that I wasn't moving at all because my body was still having trouble keeping my oxygen level up. And so they had me sedated and unaware. And so that happened on a Tuesday night. And on Saturday, they took the breathing. Thank you. Thank you so much. On Saturday, they took the breathing tube out, and they told my husband, you know, we're taking this out, but you need to prepare yourself that you may need to make some changes at your home to accommodate, you know, your wife's condition as she recovers. And her recovery is going to be measured in the number of weeks that she's in the hospital. So just prepare yourself for this. So Aaron wasn't expecting much when they took the tube out and took the sedation off. But God had different plans for me. And they took the tube out, and my voice, I don't know if you've ever known anybody who's been intubated. I was intubated for 5 days, and I could hardly talk. My throat was so sore, and my voice was so soft that it was difficult for anybody to know what I was saying. And so I was confused about what happened because I was having trouble to ask what happened. And Aaron told me, he said, do you know what happened? And I was, no, I don't know what happened. And he said, well, you had a heart attack. And I'm laying there and I'm thinking, no, I had a heart attack in 2009. Like, I have pneumonia. And he said, you had a heart attack on Tuesday and they had to do surgery and you're in the hospital recovering. It's now Saturday. And I was really upset and confused. And when he said they did surgery, I thought that they had opened my chest again, which they had done in 2009. So they had me laying flat in bed and I thought I was laying flat and that way because my chest had been opened. And so I was like being really careful not to move because I, you know, let it heal, all of this. And it wasn't until several days later that when I could talk again clearly that I said something about my chest having been opened. And my husband said, they didn't open your chest. They did it through a catheter. Your chest wasn't opened. And I was like, then why am I still laying in bed? Like, what's keeping me in this bed? And so I asked Aaron and I asked my nurse, you know, why do I have to stay in this bed? And they said, well, you just had this, you know, big event happen. And as a result of the heart attack, it took out my kidneys. So they had to start me on dialysis in the hospital. They said, so you need to, you know, rest and recover. And I was like, but the longer I stay in bed, the longer my recovery to being able to, like, be walking, going home, it's going to be longer, correct? And they're like, well, yes. And I was like, okay, so today I'm going to sit up in bed. And so my nurse was like, are you sure? And I was like, yes, let's do this. And so over the next several days, on my own, I mean, with the nurse right there, but without a physical therapist, I was sitting up in bed, sitting on the side of the bed, taking a few steps, sitting in the chair, getting up and using the bathroom on my own, doing all of these different things because I was motivated to go home. And I only spent 2 weeks in the hospital following that. And during those 2 weeks, as we got closer to when I went home, and I'm sitting up in bed, and my doctors are coming in to see me, and I'm being wheeled through the hospital to go up to the dialysis unit, and then I'm sitting up in bed and having the dialysis treatment, and doctors are walking by who took care of me when I came into the hospital during that stay, and I was very, very sick. One doctor saw me down the hallway from the dialysis unit, and he yelled, my husband was there, this doctor yelled, and he was like, you're okay! And he came running down the hall. And doctors don't do that. Doctors are serious. And he came running down, and he was like, we didn't think you were going to make it, and you're sitting up here talking to me right now. And he looks at my husband and he goes, this is shocking, right? And my husband's like, yes, it's shocking. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I'm just sitting here. And over again, doctors and nurses who had seen me when I came in and then saw me within a week and a half were amazed at how well I was doing. And they're not going to attribute it to God, but my family was not afraid to attribute it to God and to share that testimony and to share that with the doctors. Well, during that stay, right before I came home, I got a text from one of my friends who attends our church, and she is a new Christian. She's only attended our church for a little while, and she's in my small group at church. I wanted to read you the text that I got from her. It says, I was having a huge crisis of faith during your whole hospital stay. I was having difficulty with the fact that God was letting one of his most faithful children endure all of this. I couldn't see the purpose. You of all people should not have to suffer through this, and I was praying so hard to find some kind of sense of reason. I was just losing faith in the fact that there was even anyone listening. Then you started to get better. And now I'm in sort of a limbo. I'm struggling because it still doesn't make sense to me. It's so unfair. I have done some less than admirable things in my life that I am not proud of. Why isn't it me in your position? That would make sense to me. I would deserve that. This doesn't. Well, I was floored by her message. I had to take a moment before I responded because I wanted to shake her. I wanted to say, you fool. Like, No one deserves this. Don't wish this on yourself. And I told her, but my response was, it took a minute. I told her that we all go through things in this world that are tough because there's sin in the world. There isn't a rhyme or reason as to why some people suffer and why some people don't. People are not punished and people are not spared from illness, strife, or troubles because of specific sin in their life or extreme holiness in their life. They're suffering in the world because there's sin in the world. Looking back on the scripture lessons that we read today, one of the verses in John says, "As he went along, he saw a blind man from birth. The disciples asked him, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?' 'Neither this man nor his parents sinned,' said Jesus, 'but this happened so that the works of God may be displayed in him.'" God has been actively at work in my life and in my body, forgiving me of my sins and performing miracles in my body again and again so that the people around me can see him working, can see the works of God. I continue to have medical issues with my heart. I'm never going to be cured. I had a heart transplant. I'm on medications to help my body not to attack my heart. I'll always have to take those medications. And that's okay, because God's provided the science for me to be here. If it wasn't for these medical procedures and medications and different things, then I wouldn't be able to stand here before you today. I'm on dialysis right now. I'm waiting for a kidney transplant. And that's okay, because more people now know of the miracles that God has done because of what I've gone through. Things could have turned out so much worse for me. I might not even be here. I might be living with brain damage and not be able to share God's word. And so it's okay. It's okay that I went through what I went through. It's my story. It's my testimony. It's what God's done in my life. That's what God's done in my family's life. And honestly, I would do it all over again to bring glory to his name.
Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us, to him be the glory in the church and in Jesus Christ throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. We hope this sermon has encouraged you with the gospel of Jesus. More sermons are available online at our website, capenazarene.org. May God richly bless you as you serve him today.